Deep from within the temporal vortex comes the 2020 member special of the Clockwise Podcast from Relay FM, recorded Thursday, August 27th, 2020. Clockwise, four people, four tech time periods, 38 minutes and 50 seconds.
Welcome back to Clockwise. This is the timey-wimey episode. The clock is wound forward, backward, and do-si-do. I am one of your timey-wimey co-hosts, Micah Sargent, and I am joined across the time vortex by my good pal, my good buddy, and forever dungeon buddy. It's Dan the Man Morin. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing well, Micah. Is there something that...
Garbage.
Okay, I tried.
I am excited to say that we are reaching always through the time vortex, and to my left in this time stream, man, how much are we going to belabor this? I don't know. We'll find out. Is podcaster extraordinaire and the maestro of present time, it's Aline, the not mean Sims. How you doing, Aline?
I'm okay. I'm a little concerned based on the introduction of the show. It's going to be interesting to see how this goes.
only a little?
only a little.
All right. Well, that's pretty good.
I trust you.
Oh, that's a mistake. To my left in the ever swirling vortex that is this temporal miasma, it is a guy, some guy. We don't really know who he is. Well, he's a blogger and a writer.
Behold,
and a journalist.
Oh, God. I am here for you now, your founder. It's... I was here at the start. I shall be here at the end. I am the beginning and the end, the alpha and the omega. And I would like a sandwich, and I'm not to your left, Dan. I'm more hovering over the table. It's Jason Snell. Hello, Jason Snell. Hello, Dan Morin.
Jason the Mason.
Jason the Mason. Probably not, though. I'm doing well, Jason Snell. How are you?
Great.
Good. All right. Excellent. Well, Micah, take it away.
Okay. Sorry. So here's the problem, folks, is that as we're reaching through these different time vortices. There's the issue of a little bit of delay. So sometimes we might overlap one another as we're trying to shout at each other from different voids. I am the maestro of past, and so I will be talking about past tech.
Are you the ghost of Clockwise Past?
I was going to make that joke later.
Gasp, I am.
Talk, tick.
I would like to know, of course, what is everyone's favorite tech of the past? Aline, we'll start with you.
I think the scientific method is pretty cool, and I think it counts as tech. So I'm going with that. I'm thinking about specifically in these bizarre times we live in, and thinking about things like vaccines and how those are created and tested. I think the scientific method is pretty cool, and I think we should stick with it.
Scientific method. Yeah, yep. I guess it's all right.
I mean, I like it.
That's your hypothesis. I guess we'll have to put it to the test.
Oh, all right. Controlled studies.
Everybody likes a good scientific method joke. Mm-hmm. Something that I was trying to think about, and we're going to be, I think, pretty lenient with what a past technology is, because obviously there's a lot of technology from the past that's still in use today. So... I mean, even the scientific method, right? Like, it's still...
We're all
persists.
Making our rules, Dan.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, exactly. But I was trying to think of something that I felt like had a place in the past that did catapult some stuff to the future, although in somewhat of a orthogonal manner, and that is the Jacquard machine, which, if you're not familiar with it, is essentially a mechanical loom, but it was a mechanical loom that used punch cards. So they would realize at a certain point that you could make these machines, which had previously used, like, you know, people to design these complex patterns of weaving. Like, what if you could automate this by essentially making punch cards that describe patterns? And then they would run through the punch cards and it would know what threads to put where. And I think every time I try to read the explanation of exactly how it works, it breaks my brain a little bit because I'm not that smart. But I've seen one in a couple of museums, and they're super cool looking. And the idea that it, we kind of moved from there, and then, you know, hundreds of years later came back to punch cards running computers, I think is just a wonderful, delightful piece of technology history, and something that you know, presaged everything that we do with digital technology today, but used it for weaving really beautiful things. So I think that's a cool piece of past technology.
So Dan, would it surprise you to know that I almost chose that?
No, it would not. I feel like it's a good solid piece of technology history that has that weird little it's about something strange. So I like it. Jason, you got a piece of past tech?
Yeah, I was tempted to go with cuneiform on tablets, because having writing is super important to create civilization. And while some are against civilization, and trust me, they've got lots of evidence to suggest it was a mistake, I am generally optimistic about it, but I'm not going to go in that direction. Instead, I'm going to go in what might be the most obvious direction, which is movable type. I refer to, of course, the blogging platform invented in... No, I mean the original.
I almost made that joke, Jason. I had that one on my list.
Invented by many people, different times popularly thought to be Johannes Gutenberg, although other people invented similar things. But the idea that you could not just write down things on paper with ink, but you could mass produce books and mass produce other forms of written word and disseminate them widely and over time relatively cheaply, was so transformational in sort of human thought and culture. And as somebody who is a writer, I also, you know, I like the fact that this thing accelerated the dissemination of the written word all over the world. So, you know, pour one out, you know, for Gutenberg, because he died a long time ago. But thank you for inventing movable type, because movable type is good.
All interesting, intriguing, and excellent answers. I want to talk about a piece of tech that I love and hate at the same time, with nearly the same amount of passion for both. We can go back to 1879, or we could potentially go all the way back to 1800, 1802, 1840, and so on, but up to 1879, when Thomas Edison patented the first actually successful light bulb. While the light bulb is an incredible invention that has changed the way that humans actually exist in a time before where we did not have the ability to sort of safely and regularly exist at night, you know, going out into the world rather, and being able to walk around and feel safe, the introduction of the light bulb sort of changed the way that humans did the activities that they did. And of course, the light bulb then led to further advancements, including, you know, light emitting diodes and all sorts of technology that has a place in our modern world in so many different ways, as I look around at all of these lights that are shining on me. But while I love the technology, I also am very upset with the technology because of the effect of artificial light on one of my favorite things to say and one of my favorite structures of the human body, which is the suprachiasmatic nuclei. This is a little
Mike
region.
Is making stuff up again.
Promise you this is very real. This is a little region in the brain that exists in the hypothalamus, and our eyes through our optic nerve are directly connected to the suprachiasmatic nuclei. And so what that means is that you, as you're looking out into the world, it's one of the only things that is not filtered, one of the only senses inside of the brain that is not filtered by the brain first. It goes from the eye to the suprachiasmatic nuclei and then from there elsewhere. And this is responsible for our circadian rhythm. There are about 20,000 neurons in this area, and it is responsible for telling the brain when it's time to let out things like neurotransmitters that you need, and it is melatonin and all of those different things. So when artificial light was introduced, that led to the suprachiasmatic nuclei being affected at times when it was not supposed to be affected at night, and the sunlight stopped being our way of letting the suprachiasmatic nuclei regulate our internal clock. And at that point, that's when sleep issues really sprung to life in a whole new way. And as we all know, sleep is incredibly important and perhaps even more important than you realize. And we can thank Thomas Edison and who was it in 1800? I can't think of the guy's name now. Alessandro Volta for all playing a role in ruining our sleep.
Curse you, Edison!
Jerks.
Exactly.
Supercalismatic nuclei are so important. They let the light in your eye. You don't know that you need it. Supercalismatic nuclei are so important. Supercalismatic. I don't know the words anymore. Okay.
That's all beautiful. Right. Beautiful.
I'm working on it.
I love it. All right. Thank you all for
the penguins.
Thank you all for your answers on that. Let us jump to the present. Hello.
Yeah, I am the ghost of Clockwise Present. So tell me, what present tech do you want or admire or think is really cool?
Man, see, this is actually the hardest one because, like, all the stuff that's in the present, like, I don't know, I have mixed feelings about a lot of it. And I am, but, like, trying to figure out what's the most important thing. I'm going to pick something I don't have, but I am hopeful about. And I know, you know, it's a thing that's not super widespread, but it's become more and more widespread. And that is the electric car. I like driving. I do. I really enjoy driving. But I also realize that when I drive my car, I'm doing all sorts of nasty things to the environment because I still have a gas guzzling car. And that makes me sad because I enjoy driving, but I don't want to feel super guilty about it. And so the hope of the electric car that, you know, while it certainly has its own environmental challenges and, you know, you can make arguments about how cities are designed around cars and all of these things are problematic, but I still like the idea of having a car and the idea of having a car that's somewhat more friendly as far as the environment goes. So I don't have a particular, you know, specific electric car that I would necessarily praise, but I feel like I've been kind of impressed and gratified a bit that there seemed to be much more movement towards this in recent years after many, many decades of people talking about it like, oh, the electric car's just around the corner, and it was like never quite a thing. It's actually a thing now, and I'm very hopeful that in the not too distant future, and we'll talk about the future in a minute, that the electric car will be the default and we can get our cars off their old gas guzzling ways. Jason, what's your favorite piece of present tech?
Well, I've got two that I want to share, because I think when I say these, you're going to both. I'm sorry that I've stolen these from Aline and Micah, by the way, because you
darn
know,
it.
I know you were going to pick
Dan
them.
Dan stole one of mine, so it's fine.
So first, I want to say the low cost electric air compressor, because with it you can attach a nylon tube in the shape of a man and watch him dance. And it's amazing, and
that's
I don't care.
Cool.
I own a low cost little mini fan, and two different nylon. one is an orange man. The other is Santa for the holidays. But you know, sometimes you just want to feel good, and you know what makes you feel good, or at least makes me feel good. It should make all right thinking people feel good. Is a big gangly tube person just waving their arms around like they're happy, and they want everybody
you
to share in the joy of it.
Of technology from the present pick from
all the present day for the present day. But I'm not
wave
done.
Your arms,
but because it's tied with another technology that I know for a fact is in Dan's house, which is the T-Robot. Let me play again. We live in an age of wonders where you can press a button and a machine makes tea for you. It boils the water, it puts the tea in, it takes the tea back out so that the tea isn't bitter, and then it beeps and says, hey, human, I made tea for you, and you didn't have to hang around and count out time, and I'll keep it warm for you if you're still a little sleepy. I'll keep it warm for you for up to an hour. And so basically, between the little tube men and the T-Robots, I think modern technology is great, and there couldn't be anything wrong with it.
If only that little tube man would bring you the cup of tea when it's ready, then everything would be perfect!
Dan, you've ruined my idea!
That would be terrifying. Can you imagine the little tube man, like,
he would splash the tea everywhere.
Yeah, it would be a mess, too.
That guy. He's a mess.
Yeah, not a good butler. Tube
you
man as a butler.
That, but
no.
I just checked the document, and Dan is reporting to us from the future, so he might actually know that that would be a successful way to...
I don't want
to
say anything. I don't want to influence the timeline.
So for me, I'm going to have to go, and this is probably, it's certainly not as interesting as Jason the Mason's answers, but I'm going to have to go with the wearable smartwatch. I've struggled in the past with some heart issues that cropped up, and it had to do with me being intolerant to gluten, thank God, and was not sort of a node issue in my heart. But having this device on my wrist that can help me keep track of as much data as I can about my heart in a very easy and consistent way, and then also having the tools available to run an ECG if necessary, and hearing the stories about people whose lives were genuinely and legitimately saved by the device, be it via the ECG or needing to call for help and having a cellular version of the watch, and being able to gift smartwatches to family and friends and have them kind of talk about the excitement that they've experienced because of it, and knowing that giving one of these to, for example, my grandma, who may at some point have an accident or something like that, and knowing that the watch could help her in that situation. There are all of these different ways that this wearable specifically has been such a helpful thing. And I can remember when I was but a young lad watching some different cartoons and things like that, where people were, you know, talking into their Dick Tracy watches, and it just didn't seem like a tech that I would one day have. And there are moments to this day where I still stop and kind of cast aside my my loss of wonder for these items and regrow that wonder for a moment and go, holy crap, I am controlling my television from across the room with a little computer on my wrist. This is ridiculous. This is amazing. And it's just a delightful bit of technology that I don't think I quite imagined would exist when I was a kid. And to go from these huge, chunky, one cartridge DVD player type systems to now being able to send and receive messages on my wrist, it's just incredible. And so I gotta give it to, in my case, the Apple Watch, but wrist wearables in general. Aline, why don't you round us out?
Well, I'm less profound than Micah and Dan, but a little less irreverent than Jason. I think one thing that I've been really eyeing lately is the Remarkable tablet, which is an e-ink tablet that you can use for note taking and some light PDF reading. I think it just says EPUBs actually. And I just think it's so cool. I do a lot of writing by hand, but the big hiccup for me is then all the stuff that I write by hand is in notebooks. And I don't love writing on the glossy screen of the iPad, even though the Apple Pencil experience is great. I don't love the matte screen covers that are supposed to give you a more papery experience. So it's kind of like, okay, I write in notebooks and then I transcribe it to something digital, and like having something to take away that intermediate step would be great. And so I'm super interested in the Remarkable tablet and what it might do for me. It is kind of expensive though, so we'll see if I actually end up getting it or not.
All right. Well, normally we'd be at halftime now, but since this is a special members episode, all we'll say is thank you so much for being a supporter of Relay FM and or of Clockwise. We really appreciate it, and we hope you enjoy this very special episode. I come to you from the future, the ghost of Clockwise Future, and I wish to know, what future piece of technology are you excited for, Jason?
I am really excited for energy. Electricity that costs almost nothing And for the last 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, people have been saying, oh, well, fusion, nuclear fusion is going to happen and that'll be great. And we've been trying very hard and there is no nuclear fusion. But you know what? It turns out it doesn't matter because in the intervening time, people have been working on renewable energy. And not only is renewable energy great because it makes you feel good about it being cleaner and greener and better for the planet, but the fact is that the drive toward renewable energy has led to dramatic decreases in energy prices. And you can do a whole lot more if you have vast amounts of energy for very little or nothing. And so I'm really encouraged by how we already are going places that were never even predicted, even like 5 years ago, in terms of the availability and the cost of things like solar. And then you throw in hydropower and you throw in wind. There are a lot of investigations now into furthering ocean power, not only just putting kind of wind turbines out in the ocean where it's always windy, but putting turbines in the ocean and letting the ocean generate power. But between the stuff that's in our planet and the stuff that's shining down on us from the sun, we are going to, I think, in the 21st century, end up in an era where we're going to have a huge surplus of energy at our disposal. It'll be clean energy and it'll be cheap. And that leads to some other really interesting things. Like, for example, I think one of the great dreams in terms of there's a lot of concern about water availability for fresh water. And if you've got nearly unlimited cheap energy, you can do things like run a desalinization plant and get people cheap water where they need it, or get people water where they need it. So there's a lot of things that happen once energy is not a problem. And we haven't even talked about like potentially capturing energy in space and beaming it down to Earth. Just on Earth, I think we've got a lot. So I think that's going to be one of the ways that the world is very different in maybe 50 years, is that all of our kind of classic fossil fuel generations are going to go away. And instead, we're going to have electricity basically for everyone for almost nothing. And I think that'll transform the world.
I wanted to choose solar power, which would have been now an option that was completely outshined by the multiple things that Jason mentioned. So I'm going to go with a secondary one. And I have to be very careful about this so that our future AI overlords don't hear me through Dan's microphone in the future, because I am excited about the future of virtual and voice-based assistants. I know it's hard to get excited about it based on what we have right now, but I was just doing something yesterday. Listen, I know that you can do some code on your computer. You can, you know, set up a script. I bet Jason could probably calculate this in mere moments. But I was copying a list of bullets and I was pasting them into another place. And then I needed to essentially remove the returns and just turn it into a comma separated list. And again, I could do that with Text Expander or Keyboard Maestro, but I had this thought of, wouldn't it be so cool and so easy if I could have just said, hey, can you copy that list and put it in here and put commas between it? And I could say it how I wanted to. And the thing, the AI could ask for clarification if it didn't understand, and then provide me with the results. Or if it did get what I was saying, beam, it'd be done and ready to go. And I just think about different movies that have these future AI assistants that are that intelligent, that can sort of understand what you want in the way that you say it without having to come to it on its terms and using its precise and proper language and structure. And so I am excited about a future where we aren't having to learn another language style in order to communicate with virtual assistants, but instead they've come to have a grasp on ours enough to give us the things that we want, and they become, you know, something that is accessible on all of the platforms. So yes, future AI overlords, thank you for doing the hard work, and can't wait to meet you someday. Aline, what about you?
So I am a chronically ill person. I have chronic pain issues and chronic illness issues. And I think a lot about medicine. And there's this episode of Star Trek Enterprise, which is, for many reasons, the least beloved Star Trek, live action Star Trek franchise. But there's this episode of Enterprise where, you know, the ship discovers strange new worlds and goes to a planet and discovers that the matriarch of this community has bone cancer. And he does this by just, like, the simple body scan and is like, oh, bone cancer, I'll cure it in, like, 3 hours or something. And I don't know why that episode has stuck with me so much, but I think about medicine, probably not in my lifetime, but at some point in the future, hopefully, where a lot of the things that we face today are brutal today, like cancer or like maybe chronic illnesses and autoimmune conditions, where you're diagnosed with a simple scan and they're like, oh yeah, we just need to like flip these neurotransmitters, or, you know, we'll just remove that bone cancer and it's not really a big deal, thanks to our technology. And I wish we could have that now. But I think and I hope that someday that becomes a reality for a lot of people, because talk about quality of life improvements for millions and millions and millions of people. I think that would just be amazing. It would definitely, for me, be life-changing. And so it's something that I kind of daydream about quite often. It's just like, what if I could go to the doctor and instead of being like, I don't know what's wrong with you, they said, oh, here's a pretty simple fix.
That's that scene in Star Trek IV where Dr. McCoy says, oh my God, this medicine, it's like the Spanish Inquisition. And he gives the old lady a pill, and later you see the old lady and she's like, doctor gave me a pill and grew me a new kidney.
Yeah.
That's all it took.
Micah stole my answer from the future, which was about virtual assistants. However, I will say my second answer is, and you know, this might verge a little bit into something we're talking about in a moment, but a universal translator. We're pretty Ooh. Close. It's one of those things where it's like the technology that exists in terms of things like Google Translate, and Apple's new Translate features, and the fact that you can like kind of put your phone down sometimes and it'll actually do all the translation for you. It's pretty close. But it's, you know, it's a little janky. It doesn't support all languages. It sometimes has trouble with accents. And obviously, like any computer thing, it's not the best at like figuring out idioms or stuff like that. But, you know, given the fact that it's gotten so far in a relatively short amount of time, I feel confident that at some point in the future, it will be much better about that. And so being able to, say, walk around with like your little AirPod in your ear and then just have it sort of either translating for you on the fly, or maybe if you've got like an AR glasses or something like that, it can put like captions or something in. I feel like that kind of understanding could go a long way to really just, you know, not only broadening our horizons and making it easier for us to travel and meet people from other cultures and all that, but also just to like find common ground and find things that let us all relate to one another more easily. So I'm excited for a future in which we can all talk to each other and potentially, hopefully, not have terrible misunderstandings created by robots trying to destroy us. But, you know, there's no guarantees.
Alternately, we need to find the planet with the babblefish that we just stick in our ear and it'll be fine.
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to stick it in my ear. I'm just going to say. All right. Let's whoa, we got a little off kilter here. Let's take a jump to the side, Jason.
Oh, yes. So this is the sideways tech. It's neither past, present, or future. I am the not a ghost of alternate worlds, future, past, present. I would like you all to suggest a technology that probably won't happen, but that would be really cool if it did. Micah?
Based on what I see right now, and boy, am I happy I'm going first. Based on what I see right now, I don't know if it'll ever happen in my lifetime, but perhaps maybe one day in some future there is some way that this could exist. And it's, of course, the Star Trek holodeck. Mm. I think that is one of the most amazing concepts that exists in the Star Trek universe. And it's something that, I don't know, when you watch Star Trek, you just sort of, after watching it, you just kind of have dreams about what it would be like if you could go into a holodeck and what you would do there. And over time, how we learn more about the holodeck, including, you know, safety features being turned on or off, and the ability to like B'Elanna Torres skydives at one point. And there's just all this stuff that you can do in a holodeck. And oh my God, it would be so amazing. But I don't know if that's a possibility, because I don't know if we can make sort of semi-permeable light beams and things like that, and partially solid photons or whatever. But it would be awesome if we could.
Aline, counterpoint, what Micah, what if we all live in a holodeck right now?
No!
Oh dear.
Aline, please save me from this sideways place.
Well, Micah, I think you're going to appreciate my answer. Mine is a combination of my first love, Star Trek, and my very distant love, the Jetsons. Very, very distant love. I want replicators where I can have any meal I want made at a voice command, also combining Micah's earlier answer, so that I don't have to think about food anymore. Oh. If I get hungry, I can get something that's like what my body needs, but it tastes like the thing that I want. And also the Jetsons, for those times when I don't actually want to eat. The pill,
yes,
that the robot can make, that, you know, my personal Rosie can give me this pill, and I can just take a pill and consume, you know, get my calories and nutrients that way, so that when I don't want to stop and eat, I don't have to worry about it. And so that is, that's what I want. I want a future where I don't have to think about food anymore.
Amen. Preach it.
I knew Mike would like that one.
Yeah.
I am, let's see, I have a better than even chance that I'm stealing Jason's, but I'm going to go with it because nobody stole it from me. And so I'm using this opportunity, and that is, man, it's frustrating when things just break and don't work right. Wouldn't it be great if you could just point a gadget at them and fix them? So I want the Doctor's sonic screwdriver because it doesn't matter. Who knows what it does? Nobody knows. It uses sonic waves.
It doesn't work
on
wood.
That's true. So I guess for that, you might have to find something else. But for everything else, man, you forget your keys and you're locked out, sonic screwdriver solves your problem. Your computer's acting up, sonic screwdriver solves your problem. The neighbor's playing music too loud, of course the sonic screwdriver works on that. It works on everything. So
except
for me,
wood.
Except wood, I know. But like, you know, well, they have wood speakers. I guess that would be an issue. But for everything else in your life, there's the sonic screwdriver, and that is my pick. And I'm breaking the Star Trek loop here, too. So, Jason, you can probably take us back to Star Trek, right?
Yeah, I am, because I have two, one of which is faster than light travel.
Mm-hmm.
It's the warp drive, because there's a lot of space in the universe, people. And that means there are certainly planets out there that would be completely habitable by us. And we could live in other places on other planets, and there would be plenty of room for humanity to try out all sorts of different kinds of societies. And yes, there would be adventures, and perhaps there would be a prime directive or something else. Who knows? But I file this as sideways tech because I don't think there's actually ever there's not a way to travel faster than light. It's depressing. We're kind of stuck in our own solar system, but wouldn't it be great? And then the other one I wanted to point out is the ability to access parallel universes, because there are a lot of people who believe that parallel universes do exist, an infinite number of them, in fact. And although traveling to them seems impossible, wouldn't it be great if we had some way to access parallel histories, parallel universes? And I bring this up because there's nothing more poignant, I think, in pop culture views of parallel universes to me than what was lost. There's an episode of Counterpart which, spoiler alert for those who haven't watched a show that they should have watched years ago, involves parallel universes a little bit, and there's somebody tries to smuggle the new Prince CD across the barrier, because of course in our world, Prince is no longer with us, but Prince is still making music in the other parallel world. And I think there's a Stephen King story that makes reference to all of John Lennon's 1980s solo albums. I've also seen somebody wrote a thing about the Beatles albums from the 70s that never existed, and you go on and on with your favorite author or anybody else you can think of. So access to parallel universes would be another good one, but none of those are going to happen.
All right. That is all our technology from the past, present, future, and other worlds slash dimensions. That's four topics, which means we've got just enough time for a bonus topic. And I want to know from you what your favorite clockwise memory is, Jason Snell.
My favorite clockwise memory is that, Dan, we did the first pilot of Clockwise, and it had a completely different set of rules. And it's actually posted on Relay FM as Clockwise Episode Zero, I think. But it's basically, we did one where you got a certain amount of time, and it was much more strategic. Like, you could answer one question very quickly, and then you'd have more time left over to answer another question in the long. And it was too much.
And then
we did a second pilot, and that one made a lot more sense and was a lot better. And that's basically what the show is now. So that my favorite memory is sort of like figuring out the silly things we tried and before we got it right.
The alternate universe show that we didn't do.
Yeah, and then that one guy who was really offended by the show when we literally hadn't started it yet and were just trying things out and was like, I can't believe they released this publicly. And it's like, we released it as a download link and said, what do you think? We're working on it. That guy, I don't know if he's still out there. Shout out to him if he stuck with Clockwise all this time. Anyway.
So for me, it's definitely got to be anytime I was a guest on the show and some ridiculous thing that I said ended up getting selected as the title for the episode. That always just made my week anytime that happened. And so I very much appreciated that. And I can remember, you know, I'd wait for the episode to publish and then I'd go in and check. And if it was my title, I'd, you know, have a little, oh, yay, that's awesome moment. And that was always fun. Aline, what's your favorite clockwise memory?
I think it was the first WWDC in San Jose when Jason and Dan and, I don't know, David Sparks and Stephen Hackett were sharing an Airbnb, and we recorded a live clockwise episode in this weird
barracks.
Yeah, it was like a living room that had a bunch of bunk beds in it so they could put more people in this. It was so weird, but it's one of my favorite memories because I so rarely have recorded a podcast face to face with people, and I found that I couldn't make eye contact with anybody as I was talking because I can't podcast while making eye contact, apparently, because it's just not what I do anymore.
It's not what podcasts are.
Oh man, there are way too many good ones to pick. I will pick my favorite time being anytime somebody sends me a screenshot of an episode that they believe ran for 30 minutes and one second. That's my favorite. Although I will say as a core that my other one is Clockwise episode number 68, Genuine Frontier Gibberish, which is the only episode that actually went over 30 minutes, which is where Phil Michaels took over the episode and turned it into the Pundit Showdown.
Yeah, it's not actually an episode of Clockwise.
It's not really an episode of Clockwise. But yes, anytime people, we'll see. We'll see if this one ends up going over 30 minutes because someone's got to edit it down otherwise.
It's bonus. It's all bonus material.
All bonus material. Well, that's everybody's bonus topic, and that's the end of the episode. So all we have to do is thank our fantastic guest this week. Jason Snell, thanks so much for being on this special bonus episode of Clockwise.
Gleep glorp, I'm returning to my home dimension now.
Aline Sims, thank you so much for being here.
I'm so happy to be here. I love you guys.
Aww. Love you too.
Micah, I guess it's time for you to go back to the past, me to go back to the future, and hope that we meet again someday.
In the middle.
In the middle. That's right. And thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We will be back on our regularly scheduled episode, which is the next episode after you listen to this. And until then, we remind all of you out there, watch what you say.
And keep watching the clock.
It's melting!
No matter what time it is. Goodbye!